www.voiceofafrica.com as we continue our debate online. To our field stations, we thank you and say goodbye. And remember to get better, not beaten, Zimbabwe. And let's keep the African hopes alive.
There you have it. And now we continue. But farewell to our television audience, as noted, and some of our radio audiences. But we do, as we said, encourage you to continue with us on social media. So now we continue with our debate on that point, as we were going to take the comments from our audience and continue right in that and allow for each of you to respond. Thank you to Mr. Biti. We know that you're going to need much more than 2 minutes to speak on our economy. In fact, all of you, I noticed Ambassador Mutrangwa shaking his head profusely on some of the points that you were making. Please, may I give you the opportunity to rebuttal that.
Develop is capital, it's not debt. If you can get investment into a country which outweighs all the debt which he's talking about, then you move forward. This debt of Zimbabwe, they talk a lot about it because it is steeped in the Bretton Woods institutions which have never developed anybody in the last 60 years since they were established. IMF, World Bank, this and that. We have come as ZANU-PF with a manifesto which calls for international private capital to come into Zimbabwe, give international private capital optimal conditions of investment with an educated population, then the debt will be minuscule to the development capacity of Zimbabwe. China never developed because of the IMF or the World Bank, which they worship. It didn't. They went to Wall Street, they went to the Stock Exchange in Tokyo, they went to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, they went to London Stock Exchange. Private money, $96 trillion, is in private money, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds. This is where the money is. These are companies which develop wealth for the world. All the brand names which you see, they come from private companies. You give those companies optimal conditions to be in Zimbabwe, the debt is wiped out. This nonsense which has been going on about IMF and World Bank and all this, I just don't buy it.
All right. Thank you, Ambassador Mutrangwa. I'll come to you, Dr. Moyo.
Yes. In fact, I mean, I just want to supplement what Mr. Biti was saying. There are three components to dealing with our debt. The first one is restructuring the debt. We can negotiate with the people we owe money to restructure that debt to allow us to pay it off over a more extended period. Second one is debt relief, as you already pointed out. The third one, which he left out, which is the biggest component of this, is grow our economy so that it has the capacity to pay. Those are the three issues we have to do. Grow our economy, restructure the debt, and get debt relief where it's possible. That's it.
Just to interrogate those points, Dr. Moyo, on the economic growth.
If he comes in with a small one, I may give him a bigger one.
All right, that's fine. I'll allow for you in a moment, Mr. Biti, if you'll just
crazy,
allow me to finish with Dr. Moyo.
A lot of things
Mr.
Biti
and
Mr.
Biti and Ambassador Mutrangwa,
no,
I'm not yet done with Dr.
Control
Moyo.
Your debate,
so, Dr. Moyo, you speak of economic growth, right?
Yeah.
Is it possible for Zimbabwe to generate, and in over what period, to pay back our debt?
No, but
and restructuring at what cost?
No. So the situation in Zimbabwe is known in terms of our capacity. The reason why the debt is ballooned is because we can't afford to pay. It's like when...
Exactly.
It's just the same way. If you go to a bank and you borrow money for a business and the conditions change, you can restructure your debt, but you have to negotiate. We have to have the facts in order to know what is feasible in terms of how far we can stretch our debt, in restructuring the term of the debt. And then the rest is up to us in terms of how quickly we can grow our economy. Remember also, Ruveneko, our government is totally bloated. We've got a budget where 91% goes to pay civil servants because we've got a government size which is totally unsuited for the size of country and size of economy. So we can create capacity to actually service our debt. But I can't give you the details because, as you know, they run an opaque system. So you're asking for detail. I'm giving you the principles of it. Capacity to pay, restructure, debt forgiveness.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll allow for Mr. Maduku to respond. He hasn't touched on this discussion around
Yes, my response is very short and simple.
I know that if you have a new government, which is not the government that has incurred the debt, there will be an automatic environment in which debt relief would be the most, you know, functional thing. So if you remove ZANU-PF from power, this is a clear, it's a very clear political solution. If you remove ZANU-PF from power, you have a new government. The creditors behind this debt would understand. The negotiations would be simple. And then you obviously honor the other debt. And that's, I think that will solve. You need a political solution to the national debt.
President Mnangagwa is way ahead of all these simplistic solutions. Watch this economy in the next 24 to 36 months. These people, they are belong to the past.
They are
into the future. It's investment, optimal conditions for investment. Make private capital come to Zimbabwe. Make the best use of Africa's educated labor force. Produce world-class goods made in Zimbabwe for the global market. Then all these things are addressed.
Another question that's come from the audience, which I'll tie in with this particular conversation, is that of the youth. The simple question is, what are you offering them? And I'll pose this in line with our economy. We know very much that for a long period of time, the economy of Zimbabwe, if we were to be a layman, has belonged on the streets. Ndopa ne mariacho, ndoku ne kashiacho, and let's be reasonable and honest about that. You talk about Makoro Koza, you talk about money changers, Parodport, you talk about Mayuthi, they're the ones that actually know the rates, they decide what the percentage will be, they determine where money flows in this country. Not to talk about who's governing them or the mafias or whatever that are alleged to exist, but let's understand those young people, Ndomarana, that's the population of unemployed but are actually earning a living. They're not unemployed in the sense that they're sitting doing nothing, they're earning a living running around in this informal economy. So how, and practically speaking, will each of you offer the young people of Zimbabwe a formal way, an honest way of earning a living where they're not watching their back at every street corner and the rate changes daily and that therefore determines what they eat every day? What are you doing for the young people regards our economy?
Can I start?
By all means.
Yes. You know, the money which is being traded on the market in Zimbabwe, who earns it? Foreign currency. The biggest earner is tobacco. And I know because I was instrumental to the revival of the tobacco industry in this country. I was ambassador to China. I'm the one who brought the biggest investment which drives this economy today, $1.6 billion every year. You know, in February, the governor of the central bank is smiling. September, he's swooning because of the leaf tobacco industry. Our parents, our hard care. Had working farmers in that currency. The Korokozas, who are now the gold panners, who used to be gold panners, chased by the dogs. I was at the MMCZ as chairman. I said, why are you criminalizing people who are doing an age-old industry for Zimbabwe? We used to produce the biggest gold in the 13th century in the whole world. That's how we built great Zimbabwe. Now they are legit. Now they are earning foreign currency. That's second. Chrome. We had a whole stupid government of Mugabe. Stopping the sale of stopping the trade in chrome at a time when the biggest building boom in the world by China was going on. No ounce of Zimbabwe chrome in all those buildings and bridges in China. That's why we are poor. That's where the foreign currency is. What happens to it? It goes to the central bank. It is allocated to everybody who is wearing a suit and saying, I'm a businessman. Those people are the ones who earn the currency. Those are the ones who should be allowed to keep their currency and not allow it to be traded because they earn it. Not all these people whom they are talking about, they are free fallers to this economy because they are not earning hard currency. Investment is the way we should move forward. Make the economy open. Let capital come in. Let it utilize the most educated labor force on the African continent. A labor force which has proved itself when it goes to other countries. It earns hard currency. Why can't they earn any hard currency at home? It's because Mugabe and everyone was being stupid. That's why we removed Mugabe. That's why we don't have a sense of entitlement which somebody was referring to earlier on. We removed Mugabe because he was feeling entitled. That's why we don't listen to people who aspire. We listen to people who make decisions. Finally, we are the first ever liberation movement in the world which had won a war, which decided to go through the ballot box. That's why all these people are now Democrats. Had we been Vietnam or Cuba or China, we would have become a Leninist state. We refused. We went the democratic way. People don't want to give credit for a democratic movement, which is wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. I'm not yet completely answered on the youth, but I hear where it touches on it, where you talk about the central.
Yeah,
the money,
they should keep it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Even though we can't access this currency. Yeah. But let's come to Professor Maduku. There's a question here that also came on governance, and you touched upon it when you were talking in your introduction about how there needs to be a governance structure that people respect, a clean one, as you said. Now, in terms of selecting leadership that will give the young people of Zimbabwe an opportunity, Ambassador Mtrango, being the leading part of the ruling party, talks of $1.6 billion in tobacco coming in annually. How are the young people feeling the benefits of that $1.6 billion? How are you going to ensure that your governance structure implements the needs of the young people and that the young Zimbabwean can appreciate these $1.6 billion and all of that comes in from projects such as tobacco?
Thank you. I think it's important for us to stress that young people must be incorporated in any economic processes and in the governance of the country. First and foremost, there is education and skills training that the youth would need. That would be the first line. The skills training would have to channel them so they focus on what the economy is doing. The second thing is, of course, job creation. And job creation is part and parcel of the overall framework of economic development thrust. Whatever the economy does in agriculture, in mining, in tourism, infrastructure development, you have to ensure that they create jobs. I mean, that would be the immediate thing that any young people would require. And then, of course, thirdly, there has to be a deliberate process of ensuring that young people are encouraged to be in business. They are encouraged to get into investment. And these investment opportunities must be created by the state. And the state creates investment opportunities for the young people through deliberate policies that are simply said young people projects, young people grants, young people access. And that is what we will try and do.
Interesting there, you talk about skills creation. Respectfully, Professor Maduku, there are so many young people that are overqualified for many jobs in this country. To be fair, this 94% unemployment of young people in Zimbabwe is a serious statistic. And you talk of skills creation, but what more skills, sure, do we need when some people are sitting with degrees but doing nothing? And then you talk about encouraging young people. You also talk about policies, the correct policies. Tell us what these policies are. That's our question. So that young people can buy into your vision and understand what you will do differently. There were many young people's projects that were offered. Remember, if you remember, there was the Kurera Okondla Fund a few years ago. Government has, in the past, tried to support young people, but it has not always come to fruition. What would you do differently?
Well, I think first I would not entirely agree that there's already enough skills to everyone. I think that it would be an oversimplification to say that every young person has the skill and that the unemployed, there are so many young people without skills, and there are so many people that when we say unemployed, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you have no skill, you ought not to be gainfully engaged in other things. So obviously, if you are not skilled already, we have to get into skills. Then getting to your point of which policies ought to be pursued, I think you must not underestimate the fact that what has led to the massive unemployment and the massive lack of access by young people is corruption. We already have facilities where our young people can be involved in mining projects. They're not doing that because government officers who are there, they are busy taking out what ought to be for the people. So it's not a question of we inventing the wheel. That's why I said that we want to provide a clean government. A clean government simply manages what we have in the country at the moment, and that will provide the opportunities.
You cannot have skills without capital, because most of the skills which we are in the world today, they belong to Samsung, they belong to Huawei, they belong to Siemens. That's what you need. Then we can develop skills.
Thank you, Ambassador. I'm going to come to Mr. Moyo now as we close this round. Come to you, Mr. Moyo, on this question that has been brought up here from Professor Maduku, talking and continuing on that with young people and the selection of how they're going to receive the benefits and the policies. I'd like you to speak to that.
Thank you. And thanks for asking the question, because I think it's the most single most important question that this nation has to answer.
Yes.
So there are a couple of things we need to recognize. ZANU has run a country for almost 40 years, and I've been around the country talking to young people. Most of the 40-year-olds, they've never worked. They actually don't know what work is in terms of employment. The damage is unbelievable. So our challenge is not just providing them gainful employment. It's rehabilitation, how you get them into a state of employability in the first place. Huge issue. But on the gainful employment side, let's not just look at being employed. There is entrepreneurship on the one side. So government has to put in place facilities to support entrepreneurs in terms of capitalization of their ideas. So that's one component. The second component is industry reestablishes and gears up. We need to take, because that takes time. It will take anything, 12 months, 18 months, even 24 months for industry to reestablish themselves. In that time, we as a country have to come up with social programs to literally rehabilitate young people who are on substance abuse, prostitution, all of those things. We've got huge social damage. So we have to put in place social programs for national service, in my opinion. Not military, but social service, to help them come away from the habits that they developed and prepare them for employability as industry ramps up. That's what we have to do. But in that time, to support the prof here, Professor Maduku, theoretical training, theoretical qualifications are not the same as skills. So during that time, we have to consult with the people investing in this country where they need skills most. And so in the time of rehabilitation of the youth, we then have to put in place programs to make them ready for employment, imparting skills in that time.
Thank you
very much.
We have a proven labor product in this country. Get any Zimbabwe into a foreign country where foreign currency, where capital is allowed to thrive. They do well. So as a sample of this population in Australia, in South Africa, in England, Zimbabweans do well. Why are you doubting the capacity of Zimbabwean educational system? It has proven itself elsewhere.
The main thing
is to bring capital into this country.
Thank you,
Mugabe did not know the value of capital. And
yes,
that's
indeed.
Why we removed him
in
November.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Ambassador.
Yes.
Do we need to do the ground rules again?
One of the things that perhaps we really haven't touched on is corruption. And Ambassador Muchangwa, you rightly said that one of the single most important decisions that your government, your party, has made is education.
Yes.
Education, and you're right. You were obviously one of the few countries in Africa, and in fact globally, when it comes to education. But there are critics also who say that there is also somewhere else which is not particularly positive, negative, where you have succeeded in the last 38 years.
Yeah.
And that you have actually succeeded in institutionalizing corruption and impunity. How do you react to that?
Exactly what you have said. That's why in November we removed the person who was responsible for that corruption and impunity. I mean, the moment you even get to imagine that your wife can become a successor in a country which was fought for, where she was not there, there's something, that's the worst form of corruption at political level. But look, there's institutional corruption. I've given you an example already. Why do the people who earn the hard currency of this country not be allowed to use it themselves? It goes to the central bank. The central bank allocates it to a fuel monopoly, and then they start distributing it. And we have all these industries asking every day, we want foreign currency. To be a businessman means to go to the capital markets in New York, in London, in Tokyo, raise your money and take risk on that capital. All the businessmen here, they don't do that. They go and apply to the Reserve Bank and get an allocation. Who then is the businessman? It's the central bank governor, because he's the one who is taking the risk. But taking the risk with whose money? The money from the Makorokozas, the money from the tobacco farmers, the money from the chrome earners. That's what is wrong about this economy. people who should who want to buy fuel, they should go and get their money on the market, not go to the central bank. That's what institutionalizes corruption. People don't challenge it because they all have this Rhodesian economy in their heads. Most of these people, we comrades, we those who fought in the war, we look outside the box. That's why we change governments. That's why also we want to change the model. That's why we removed the Mugabe to change the economic model which was doing. And you are going to see the results with our new government. I am not going to be bothered about all this IMF nonsense and all that stuff. We make Zimbabwe ideal for private capital, let investors come, give them the optimal conditions, make the best use of Zimbabwe's skilled labor force, educated labor force, produce world-class goods made in Zimbabwe for the global market. Make Nike feel at home in Zimbabwe. Make Siemens feel at home in Zimbabwe. Make Huawei feel at home in Zimbabwe.
Unfortunately,
then you get skills. Then you get not training skills. How do you train skills?
Mr. Ambassador,
in an economy which has never been growing.
Unfortunately,
you never have skills.
Time,
you get skills from those who have acquired.
Time is
you
not
have done well
ally.
On the global market.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry. Can I just make an observation?
Yes, please.
The ambassador here is not aware that most serious global businesses will not come into this country unless we've got a relationship with the IMF and the World Bank.
That's not true. That's not true.
Let's. Yeah. Well,
that is simply not true.
Let me come in.
Wrong education from the Western countries.
Professor Maduku, I think he has a point. Professor Maduku, you obviously heard what the ambassador said about corruption, and he was very, I think, good enough, at least to admit that his party, frankly, has been on the wrong side of the corruption issue. But what about also those who say that if you talk about corruption, the mother of corruption, in fact, happens to be electoral injustice. And that unless you deal with these electoral injustice, you will have no moral authority to fight these other symptoms of corruption.
Yes, I think I agree. Let me first say that from listening to Ambassador Mtangwe, we must be clear. You cannot say that President Mugabe was running a one-man or a one-person government. And that once you say that, once you describe Mugabe,
we removed Mugabe.
Please,
we
please.
Know what was wrong with
please,
him.
Please.
Come on.
Order, Mr. Basel.
This thing has been recycled the whole night by everybody here.
You were once a soldier, and you said it to us, you know, for a soldier, the key is discipline.
Yes.
It's not...
The
main thing about democracy is not to be bombarded by three people on the same question the whole night as if they are in an inquisition. This is the same argument repeated by everybody, obviously.
Let me proceed.
Yes,
he has
please.
Repeated his main point from point one is to say we removed Mugabe.
Which
and then
true.
To distance the administration of President Mnangagwa from the administration of President Mugabe. That cannot be. It's not possible politically. It's not possible legally. It's not possible in any way. They are part and parcel of the same. So in saying Mugabe failed,
then let the people choose
failed.
On Monday. Let the people choose
please,
on Monday.
Please.
They will decide only what you are
please.
Saying.
Well,
Mr. Ambassador, please.
So I would say that the issues related to electoral theft or electoral malpractices is correct. It is something that has to do, from our perspective, it is a huge project. It's the difference between us and others has been the ZEC issue. The issue here, let's go to resources to do an election, for example. You get the current president, who is the candidate, using helicopters to address 15 rallies in a day. Hmm. You get the rest of us
Reagan
driving
does,
in
America
bed.
Does the same thing. UK does the same thing. What's new here?
That's not true.
But that's where
everybody
was
incumbent.
If you do, you have to pay for it. You have to pay for it from your
your
party pocket.
No, everyone
yes?
who's incumbent uses incumbents
no.
to be in charge.
No.
May I complain
now
that?
Now we get everybody who is walking in the street who wants to be a candidate. He wants a helicopter.
You see, Mr. Ambassador, you are right, like everyone else, really, to be entitled to your different types of opinion.
Let's talk about things which
but certainly not your different sets of facts.
Yeah, but surely you have to.
You're making this argument frivolous now.
Please.
I think he has a reason to do that because he has to shield himself from the obvious facts that are coming out. Well, they are important points. That yes, you cannot have a situation where you have a completely unbalanced environment, and then the reason why he keeps on saying let's wait for Monday. He knows that they are using a completely unbalanced.
So don't participate then. Why are you talking about democracy? If on Monday you don't believe in the election.
Please let me finish.
We haven't reached that. We are participating in the democratic process to build
our
country.
The rules.
We will not give up in our struggle to get this country more democratic. But we are just for that reason, it has to be addressed. That framework, they do not have the moral authority. I think that to challenge. It will be very clear that you cannot divorce the administration of President Mugabe from the administration that
true.
Is currently.
We are not the same.
And that when we say 38 years, and he has denied.
We removed
that,
38 years in November. We did.
I won't
you
be able
didn't.
To continue because.
Thank you.
Very, yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, you repeat now, the same thing over and over
Mr.
again.
Bitty.
We removed him. You
Mr.
didn't.
Bitty.
All of you failed. And even if we are give you a chance, you still fail because you have never done anything
please.
To achieve anything in your life.
Mr. Ambassador,
right,
please.
Gentlemen, just a
please.
Reminder, Ambassador Mutangwa, we do not in any way shun your passion for the country and what you need to say. But I must reiterate that everybody in this room is passionate. The fact that they left their homes and their jobs to be here means they're passionate about their country and they want an equal opportunity
then
to hear
you
from
don't
all
disparage,
the candidates.
Then you don't disparage the passion of the others, particularly if it is steeped in faith.
Ambassador Mutangwa, respectfully,
yes.
Please allow for all the candidates to speak as they desire, and we will give you every opportunity to rebuttal.
There's been
but
one consistent statement. Mugabe is Mnangagwa is Mugabe. Mnangagwa is Mugabe. He is not.
Thank you, Ambassador.
Thank
that's
you.
Why
I
he had to run away.
Everybody knows the difference between Robert Mugabe and President.
A world
Mugabe.
Of a difference.
There we go. Thank you very much. Now, over to Mr. Bitty. I believe you were trying
yes.
to make your point.
No, you had to ask me a question.
Yeah, what I actually Sorry. Wanted to ask you, Mr. Bitty, is that we talk about electoral injustice. You won last time, at least according to you and a lot of others, back in 2008. You were not declared victors. You subsequently had an election in 2013, and you lost that election, at least by every indication. And you're going to be competing in another election next week, and yet you don't seem to have confidence in the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission. I'm sure you are aware of a very, very intelligent man by the name Albert Einstein, who once said that if you continue doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, it must be insanity. Are we talking about political insanity here or electoral insanity?
Well, you cannot blame the victims. We have been the victims of electoral fraud. Zimbabwe, since independence in 1980, we have had an average of an election in every 4 years. We've had about 12 elections, but none of those elections have delivered. But it's not unique for Zimbabwe. It's the story in Africa across the board.
Most of Africa.
We are victims of electoral authoritarianism, a process where you go through normative electoral processes, but substantively there is no change. And the system is designed to reproduce the odious rule of the status quo, of the incumbents. And that's what we go through in Zimbabwe. In most developed countries, in most open societies, elections are fraught with the outcome uncertainty. You don't know who is going to win. In captured places like Zimbabwe, you don't have outcome uncertainty. You've got procedural uncertainty, rules that are bent and twisted at every turn. You have coercion, you have fear, and that's what we are going through. So we don't trust the Zimbabwe Election Commission. We don't trust that the system, even if it wanted to, is capable of running a free, fair, legitimate, credible election. But we participate in this election. The reason why we participate in this election is that, number one, it's our democratic right. We fought for it. Our fathers fought for it. Our mothers fought for it. The key essence of the liberation struggle was one man, one vote. One person, one vote.